Hello and welcome to Wax Lyrical, the advertising podcast from Wax On and the Marketing Society. I'm Mark.
I'm Karen.
Hi, I'm Paul.
And I'm Julie.
And in this episode, what's happening at M&C Saatchi? That's really sad.
I know.
That Peloton ad, some 2020 predictions, and as ever, some ads, but this time our favourite ads of 2019. Ooh. And hello to a special guest, Julie. Julie Atherton, I've known for several years now, haven't I? Julie and I have both been active supporters of the DMA and the IDM. And now you've gone plural. You're a consultant. You're a strategist. You're an authorette as well. We'll talk a bit about
Exciting.
Your book, which is called Social Media Strategy, A Practical Guide to Social Media Marketing and Customer Engagement. And you've worked on loads of impressive brands, Nissan, ITV, ASOS, and St. John's Ambulance, to name but a few. You lecture and you train and you consult. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm very excited to be here.
I'll be honest, I was saddened to see the news about M&C Saatchi because, you know, it must be difficult inside their building in Golden Square. There must be people who are worried about losing their jobs. But let's just recap on the facts that this accounting irregularity seems now, certainly what they're saying in public, has added up to nearly £12 million. And I suppose the unkind thing is it sounds like it's something that is not illegal, but Paul, you know more about this. They were bringing you're our leader financially. They were bringing forward revenue that they shouldn't have done.
Yeah. Which is kind of, I understand the tension of you've got
targets
to hit and you feel like that money's coming, so you recognise that revenue ahead of time, but it shouldn't be done. And then I'm guessing that money didn't materialise and they've left themselves in a bit of a pickle.
Yeah, I suppose you can kind of hide it for a bit and then it gets bigger and bigger. And it's one of those things that the lie just gets so big that you can't hide it any longer. And then for, you know, some very senior people to kind of stand down. So there's clearly a big problem there and they're indirectly accepting responsibility for it.
Well, I suppose because of the governance part of their responsibility as directors, they've got to be in that role, haven't they? That is actually your ultimate responsibility.
Yeah, and it's not the first time, is it? It's a, I can't remember what it was, maybe 6 months ago, we spoke about this before on one of the podcasts around that there was a previous accountancy error, which I assume is connected to the one they've announced now. So it's not the first time they've had to publicly come out and say, in inverted comments, accountancy error, but it's someone's cocked up.
Yeah. The final thought on this is the rumours that guess who's going to buy M&C Saatchi?
Who else?
But our good friends, because we all used to work for them, Accenture.
Yeah, I saw that.
I mean, they do have very big pockets, literally. And, when I was working there, and I've said this on a previous podcast of ours, their objective was to spend their billions of dollars on acquisitions. They wanted to be the most acquisitive. And I don't mean in the marketing services sector. I mean in every sector. They wanted to be the most acquisitive company in the world. So, you know, a few days ago they were valued at £70 million. Who knows what they're valued at by now? 30? I don't know. That's mere bagatelle to Accenture, isn't it?
Do you think there's something to do with this tech creativity link up that's driving this thinking that, you know, there needs to be much more integration between those areas and
what
that kind of, feels very what's the driver? What's driving? Where are creative thinkings going? And where's the ownership of that? And where's the money being spent in those things?
I wonder if for Accenture it was, they obviously had a plan to buy more in the creative space, and they've just seen an absolute bargain kind of appear. And it's actually a bit of a reactive one. I can't imagine they were looking at M&C like until recently. Really,
exactly.
it just doesn't feel right based on what we've seen in terms of their acquisitions. Having been valued at what is it, 400 million a year ago, and now down to 70, it makes sense that they're kind of it's more reactive than planned, I suppose. But it's on one hand, it's very sad because obviously those guys that are heavily invested in that business suddenly
they're not going to get their pensions.
Planning their share of $400 million only 12 months ago at Christmas. Yeah. Now they're planning their share of a much smaller pie, which is a lesson and a warning for all of us, I think. Which is like, don't count your chickens because it's that ruthless. Certainly for
on the first accountancy.
Exactly.
Slightly. Yeah. Fuddling of the accounts.
If you get a whiff, get out.
I just wanted to make a point on your first point, the point you were making about this technology and creativity. So there's been quite a lot of talk about it. At Cannes, there was a load of talk, and Forrester did a report on, they'd done loads of analysis on customer experience. And they were saying to get real growth, investment has to move out of technology and into creativity, because the experience of the brand is what's going to drive growth for brands.
Yeah.
So there's been so much investment going into improving technology, getting those returns. Digital has moved us into that direction, but actually we need to swing back in the other direction. So maybe, I think you're right, I don't think this is necessarily the reason for them buying Saatchi's, but I do think this is the reason why they want to buy creative people and creative businesses.
Yeah.
Because they can't continue with just making things run quicker, better, faster.
Mm. Yeah. One of the reports talked about their sports and entertainment section, which I thought was quite interesting, which makes a lot of sense. When I was working at Edelman, that was probably the biggest growth area for Edelman, and was invested in quite heavily with talent and money in terms of their entertainment section. That's kind of loosely where the kind of the money is in terms of sports and the entertainment industry in terms of movies and all that sort of stuff. So that would make sense. Whether they buy that bit only, don't know, probably not possible, but it was that seemed like a relevant point of view, I suppose, that kind of countered the fire sale.
That's an interesting
angle.
Point, Paul. Yeah, I mean, if we were the team at MNC and we were looking at how can we dig ourselves out of this hole, then selling off the sports division might be a good way to raise some cash to kind of fill that £12 million hole.
Yeah.
Just before recording, there was a Twitter storm about the new Peloton ad. Which, I don't get the product anyway. I mean, who would pay, £3,000 for a bike and a video? Goodness me. Mm. You've got better things to do. Go for a run in the park. I don't have shares in Peloton. We'll put a link to the ad in the podcast notes. But suffice to say, a lot of people, particularly women, have said it's quite sexist. Karen, I'm looking at you as I speak.
Yeah, I mean, that ad was insane. It's a nice little debacle to end 2020 for us amidst all the other debacles going on. But this one is, I mean, really, if we're talking about turkey ads, this was a turkey. It was quite mental that this ad ever got signed off. It was a flimsy story, terribly executed, and yes, it was very sexist.
A Peloton? Give it up for our first time ride.
All right, first ride. I'm a little nervous, but excited. Let's do this.
I think the people who are buying that bike are buying it for the status symbol of having that bike.
Yeah.
I don't think if you need to lose weight you're worried about your body image, you're probably at Weight Watchers, you know, with lots of supportive people who are helping you kind of think positively about that and help you get through that. You're not buying a bike for $3,000 and, you know, making, movies about yourself on the bike, waking up at 6. I mean, it's just like the whole thing is just ridiculous. I think the level I find it worrying on is the same reason why I have a problem with Mrs. Hinch. It's kind of things that are showing women in roles that make me feel very uncomfortable, and it's supposed to be acceptable and we're just kind of go along with it and think it's all right, you know, because she's making money out of cleaning, which I can't imagine anyone would ever enjoy, but you know, so traditionally women were staying at home and cleaning, and suddenly, oh, she can stay at home and clean and have fun doing it, and as long as she's posting on Instagram it's fine. And this woman's like on a bike, trying to make herself look like a model at all times, whether it's 6 o'clock in the morning or, you know, like when she's cycling for half an hour, an hour on her bike. And we're all supposed to think it's still fine. That's my worry. Mm. I find it insidious. But whether it's going to damage the brand or not, probably isn't, but I just find on another level quite, I don't like it.
I'm with, we're both you guys, it's quite scary really. We've had ads this year where there's been moments within the ad where we're like, okay, that's not right. This whole ad from start to finish is wrong, and it is quite scary how that's even made it past script, let alone be made.
I know how. It was all men that signed it off.
But the proof will, back to the brand question, the proof will be the pudding, which is how their Christmas sales do.
Yeah, I feel like you bring people over to your side if you can at least acknowledge what's happening. And instead, what got acknowledged was how badly behaved they'd been with lots of other people making parodies. And again, that might just be more attention for them. But I thought quite amazing that they managed to get the actress from the ad into one of the parodies. And I did wonder how Peloton would have felt about that.
This gin is really smooth.
Yeah.
We can get you another one, mm-hmm. if you like.
You're safe here.
To new beginnings.
I'm sure their lawyers were scrambling around her contract to be like,
Was she allowed to do that?
And maybe it was filmed over 12 months ago or something, so it was absolutely fine.
Maybe they could have made one with the husband and she got him the same bike, and then they just recreate it with the opposite way. That might have been a way to recover it.
Yeah, exactly.
Very good, yeah.
That would have been a really good way to acknowledge it without actually stepping away from it.
And he goes through the same cheesy world of the year with his little videos. I don't think he'd be,
Yeah, looking longingly at her on the sofa. Please like my video.
Well, she's eating chocolates. Yeah. Godiva.
A year ago, I didn't realize how much this would change me. Babe, I want a divorce.
Can I just talk about Ryan Reynolds? Because I've been fascinated by his almost like turning advertising on his head. He's obviously a Hollywood star, but I think he'd made the kind of most influential people in advertising, and he's done it a few times with his like spats with Hugh Jackman, largely around his gin brand. And I actually looked into it to see kind of, is it just him? Has he got an advertising agency? What's actually going on? And it turns out one of his partners, a guy called George Dewey, who he kind of worked with on marketing the original Deadpool, if you guys remember rightly, that was very much kind of very kind of out there, breaking the fourth wall, really PR-led things that did amazingly well. They basically set up their own like marketing production company now. This George guy he's been like a super senior marketeer at like Fox Studios, but he's an ex-ECD from McCann Erickson.
He could be in the bike ad.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that'd be amazing, right? He would act it so well.
So I'm now taking this idea to another level, and Ryan Reynolds is the husband who gets the bike.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's a whole different level of aspiration.
Let's tweet him.
This holiday, give the gift of Peloton.
Do you know, I'm always nervous about making predictions about the coming year, but you can't switch on your marketing laptop without being bombarded by folks telling you what's going to happen in 2020. And I've looked at quite a few of them. And I think there's one consistent theme apart from artificial intelligence and voice control. The other one is that the social platforms are going to have a tough year next year. And I have an embarrassment of social experts in front of me.
I feel really passionately about this actually, because I think the biggest problem is that we call it social media and we just lump in social media as being everything's the same.
Yeah.
So if you look at social channels, if you think about Reddit, TikTok, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, they're as different from each other as above the line is different from display, is different from email, is different. So these are all completely different ecosystems that people operate in very, very different ways. And because we don't think about social and the way our audiences or our potential audiences are behaving in these environments as part of our strategy, we add on social at the end. Social's become an advertising platform rather than an environment where brand can really connect with people.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest challenge, actually. And typically, you know, people who run brands, people who are the most senior decision makers, don't understand the language of social the language of social, the traditional language of social, which has been likes, engagement, all of these kind of things, don't translate into the boardroom in terms of, your brand value or your ROI or your sales. And so actually social's in a kind of funny little place in a business strategy, and it needs to grow up and get out of it, I think. So I feel you know, it, as a marketer, I don't think we should be trying to change people's behavior. I think we should be trying to understand how people naturally behave in that environment and encouraging them to do that on behalf of our brand or business. So if we don't take the time to really understand that, you know, TikTok's going to be huge, I think, certainly in the States next year and probably here next year as well. And it's a really, really young audience that are operating there. And it's a really influencer-led kind of positioning that brands are going to have to take in that environment. But how do you navigate working with an influencer who's is so young? They don't know anything about business, legal. They don't know what the rules of the game are. Mm. They just happen to have plenty of followers that you want to get hold of through being partnering with them. You know, there's going to be some... It's a very, very tricky space to be in. Mm. But if you don't have a clear understanding of what your brand is going to do in that environment and why it's going to have value in that environment, then I think you're just going to end up advertising. And that isn't feeling very authentic. Mm. And the amount of, you know, ad blocking and all of these other things that are going on, it's very, very hard then to get around that. And then you're just paying to be seen in this echo chamber of the algorithm, which isn't really... about, you know, not building your brand, are you just selling?
Mm. Yeah.
Have they cracked their revenue model?
The word on the street is that they're getting faster than Snap. They're getting to the revenue model faster than Snap did. So they are going to get there pretty, pretty quickly. And there's talk about being able to buy direct from platform. So, and actually, you know, this kind of ephemeral, this kind of feels more like a real social environment, which Facebook now feels like an advertising platform.
Exactly right.
You know, so they are in a very, very different place. Mm. And you know, Facebook are worried. They're trying to bring out their own versions of, you know, what goes on there. So they're trying to bring out their own, you know, music stuff. But I don't know whether they're really ever going to get there. As part of my research from a book I worked with, I spoke with a research consultancy who've done some longitudinal focus group studies with 16 to 19-year-olds' attitudes to social media. And what they've seen is that what these young people are telling them is that social is completely integral to their lives, but actually they want to use it in a much more private way and they don't want to leave a digital footprint. So they've been either burned by posting stuff publicly that they regret or their accounts being hacked and somebody else posting something they regret. So they use social in a very, very different way than sort of older generations do. Mm. And then the other thing is just really a personal reflection, because I talk to loads of people about social, is that if you believe what people tell you about Facebook, then nobody is on Facebook. People are shy Facebook users. So everyone says, oh, you know, I'm on Instagram. I used to be on Facebook. I don't do it anymore. Their numbers are still huge.
Of course.
So I think there's a sort of denial about how much people use Facebook. And that shows in that kind of reflects what you're saying, this difference between results and what people are telling you in research. But I think this underlying embarrassment of using Facebook is something that Facebook should be very, very worried about, because it's a kind of start of a brand. You know, it's starting to make the brand feel a little bit toxic for some people, and I would be very concerned about that. So it's interesting in for the 2020 elections in the States, Twitter have said they're not going to take any political ads. And Facebook have said they're not going to fact check any ads, they'll take anything. And that kind of, there is something I think in Twitter recognizing possibly what Trump is doing to their brand that's making them feel that they need to do something in 2020.
Thanks for the follow.
Come on, Kenny, you wanted to come out here and follow everyone.
We thought we would end the year by looking back at some of our favorite ads. And Julie, as our special guest, have you got a favorite ad of 2019?
Yes, so I wanted to talk about the Beko ad, which I think is really, really interesting on a number of levels. So I'm very privileged actually to work with another social enterprise business that has 80% of its staff are disabled or carers of disabled people. So it's really close to my heart. And I think it's really brilliant what they tried to do. So they obviously make amazing soap. It's vegan, it's eco-friendly, they don't use any packaging, you know, plastic packaging, all of those kind of things. So they've got a brilliant purpose and heritage story to tell. and 80% of their staff are disabled. So they wanted to celebrate the skills of those staff, and they have this campaign, hashtag Steal Our Staff, which was to put the people's CVs on their packaging and also to make these lovely films about them. So on the one hand, I think it's fantastic, and they're doing it in a really creative way. It's really interesting. It's really well executed. But I suppose the thing that I wanted to talk about as well was, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, was it could have been so much more powerful than it was if they thought about the different audiences that they had. And this, I think, is the challenge with brands that have a purpose, is that they think about the purpose and assume that that's going to drive everybody. But in reality, it drives a certain section of the audience. So they got loads of shares, they got loads of likes, they got loads of reach and awareness and news out of it by putting it on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. But the people who are going to give these people the jobs aren't those people. And if they'd gone on LinkedIn and thought about how they used the way that people find people, recruit people for jobs using channels like LinkedIn and other, Glassdoor, all of those kind of things, they could have actually made this a much more powerful and effective campaign in reaching the other audience. So I think they got the consumer audience and the journalist audience right, but they didn't think about how they could have used social in a different way for other amplification.
It's a really interesting perspective, yeah. I think you should give them a call.
A man with a guide dog stands on a factory floor, looking sad.
What do you mean sad? Not as sad as the 1.1 million disabled people struggling to find work.
So when you asked me what my favourite ad of 2019 was, suddenly every single ad went out of my head, and I couldn't think of anything. But one ad that did stand out, I mean, you would have heard me waxing lyrical about the Sainsbury's Christmas ad, which I still absolutely love. But I also really loved, and I think also testament to the fact that it has stuck in my head, is the Tailors of Harrogate's ad for the coffee bags, which I thought was a really charming ad, quite simple in its execution, but really charming story about how much of a no-brainer coffee bags was.
Coffee bags? Why didn't they think of this before?
So I think the strap line was, why didn't we think of it before? And the ad is basically showing different scenarios with people about to have a eureka moment for coffee bags, and then something gets in the way, and they travel through the ages. And we talked in the Christmas podcast as well about how effective advertising can be if it's set in a very distinctive time and place. And I thought they leveraged that really well. They brought to life very distinctive scenarios in the 80s, on a train, and then in the current day. And I thought they did it really well. So yeah, simple but effective.
Taylor's coffee bags, ground coffee in a bag. Why didn't we think of them before?
We're talking about ads almost weekly, aren't we? So it's a tricky one to pick. We've reviewed many, but after some thought, for me it's Walkers with Spice Girls.
We are live with the Spice Girls. We're outside the house with the Spice Girls' best ever fan.
Definitely not the one with Mariah Carey. But the one
I like that one too.
Me too.
If only because I got really geeky about it. And you remember me going on, I can't believe you can really tell that she actually wasn't in the same studio as everybody else. Even
yes.
Down to the props. Look at the ad again and you'll see the prop hand for Mariah is missing the real Mariah jewellery. Just say.
You heard it here first, yeah.
You've watched it too many times.
Obviously.
Yeah.
The reason I don't like the Mariah Carey one is the reason I like the Spice Girls one, because getting celebs right and not watching it and going, come on, you know, that's just a payday.
Yeah.
Actually, the Spice Girls one was like, it felt appropriate. It was.
It looked like they were having a ball,
yeah, it was
didn't
really
it?
Well acted. It was kind of, and for me, I always prefer ads that I feel entertained and invariably laugh at. Very, very rarely would I go, have you seen this? And that was one, I think, probably one of the few this year I've come in the next day and be like, did you see it? Have you seen it? Amazing. Like, it's one of the few I actually saw like live. But yeah, the script was bang on, the acting was bang on, casting's bang on, and the use of celeb, which for me is very, very difficult. And like, we've debated things like Elton John in the past, and Mariah Carey, I think, is, whilst it will have impact, I don't like it, and it feels it feels forced. Yeah, yes, which it exactly is. But the Spice Girls one was just was hilarious, and the script was just kind of kept hitting you with different things, especially the mum at the end.
Come on, man.
Son, you should have said your griefs.
Mum!
Oh, Dev, it's not you. Our best ever cheese and onion is now even harder to share. When it comes to the crunch, it must be Walker's.
May I choose an ad as well?
I'm
going to choose an ad that you haven't yet seen, I don't think. So I'm going to give you the link to it. And I'm sorry, it's a bit sad, but a bit real. And it's an ad in America for, well, actually by, not for, Pantene. It's been made by GLAAD, which is the equivalent of Stonewall in America, who campaign for LGBTQ rights. And it's based on this insight, which I can totally identify with, which is that this Christmas, 44%, of queer folk like me won't be going home as their true selves. They'll be hiding something about themselves. And I'm sorry, but that does make it still makes me sad that at this time when we're all meant to be together with our families, half of my queer friends won't be able to go home and celebrate Christmas in an authentic way.
44%.
Yeah, I know.
And I
can understand that. I was telling you before we were recording, you know, before I was out to my parents, taking my bloke home because I wanted to. I mean, I was brave enough to do that because I wanted to be with him over Christmas, but I wasn't brave enough to say, by the way, Mum, this is my boyfriend.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess credit to them for not making a fuss about it, although we did have a fallout at one stage. That's a whole other podcast. Let's not go there now. I wasn't explaining to Mum and Dad why he was there with me and all this kind of stuff. So I wasn't, and not just with Mum and Dad, but with the rest of my family, you know, because you're with your grandma and everybody else, aren't you? And there's all those kind of easy, isn't it? And I think they all knew because, oh, this is Mark's friend. You know, it was the slightly odd way that they explained.
Air quotes around it.
This is Mark's friend from university. Oh, okay, right, you know. So yes, it's just a choir singing about Christmas, but the little vignettes show people going to their homes, trying to be their authentic selves as either being trans or queer or non-binary or just plain old gay like me.
I kind of was sat there thinking, what is this got to do with Pantene? Why a Pantene? But I'm not close to Pantene as a brand, so I don't know whether they are in that place or not. But if they're not, then I feel cynical about it. If they genuinely are, and it's a big commitment, think like always with their kind of commitment to Like a Girl, that they've kind of went in there and really consistently developed content, built their brand around that. It became part of their brand story that was really alongside that. Then if they are going down that road, then maybe that's the right thing. If they're not, I feel like it's not building trust in a brand. And that is worrying for me for brand longevity.
Well, sadly, that's about it from the Wax Lyrical team for this episode. And for 2019, thank you for listening. Thank you for giving your feedback, for voting, for coming on the show, for telling us how to make it better. Without being too mawkish, we really couldn't do it without you. We're now taking a break over Christmas and the new year. We'll be back on Monday, the 13th of January. Set your iTunes reminder for the new podcast episode on Monday, the 13th of January, 2020. I will see you then.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
And thank you for coming on today, Julie. It's been brilliant. Thank you for all of our guests this year as well. And yeah, thank you to you guys. It's been good fun. Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, yeah.
And Happy New Year.
Yeah, Merry Christmas and thanks for asking me. It's been a blast.
See you next decade.
Bye. Yeah.
Hey, look what we found under the Wax Lyrical Christmas tree. It's a little present from our friend Julie Atherton. If you'd like to get a copy of Julie's book, Social Media Strategy, a practical guide to social media marketing and customer engagement, Julie has kindly given us all a 20% discount code. Just go to koganpage.com/SMS and use the code FMKSMS20 to get your very own discounted copy. You'll find more details in the podcast notes. You see, I was lucky enough to get an advance copy of the book, and in my review, I said, "This is much more than a social media how-to book. By showing where social integrates with the full suite of marketing tools and channels, Julie has created a marketing handbook too." Ah, thanks, Julie, and happy Christmas!